Got another jobs report coming up. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel is on the line, founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. What are you anticipating, Tom?
I think we're going to see the similar numbers as we have, John. I think we're in a decent place for the economy. I think it's kind of the rules of a recession have changed a little bit from what's going to define it. And we still have more jobs than we have people who are able to take them. So I think we're going to get a few hundred thousand new jobs showing in the jobs report on Friday.
Recession is consecutive quarters of negative growth. Is that right?
Yeah, it's two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. But, you know, and as you know, I'm not an economist. I just play one on the radio. And however, you know, what we're looking at here is a situation that you wouldn't think. There's never been a recession where we've had record low unemployment. So that's why there's a contradiction that people are saying, how can we be in a recession if we have record low unemployment? Which is a very, very good point, that if people are making money and they have jobs, that even if there is mild inflation, what's the problem here? And I think that we're starting to get into a little bit of a media-created self-fulfilling prophecy. And we've gotten some layoffs on the tech sector because interest rates have risen, but there are still so many more jobs available that there's places for those people to go. In a traditional recession, you'd get layoffs and they wouldn't have anywhere to go. There's no reason for anybody getting laid off from whatever the tech company is to go file for unemployment. They can get a job.
So this morning when Wendy Snyder was filling in for Bob Surratt, she had an economics whiz-bang guy on, and he was saying the big debate is a recession versus inflation. What's more important? And I wonder what your answer to that question is.
Oh, I think we'd much rather have short-term inflation versus a recession. I mean, people forget, if there's one thing that we have in America, it's very short memories. And how worried we were in the second quarter of 2020, the fourth quarter of 2008 and early 2009 felt like, is that when there is a national recession, when there is layoffs, when there is 7.5%, 8.5% unemployment, that is very fearful and afraid. When everybody has a job and they can pay their bills and gasoline is $6 a gallon, doesn't make anybody happy, and we're nervous, but we're not worried about getting kicked out of our homes.
Well, how is the gross domestic product going down then if everybody has a job that wants a job? We're almost at full employment.
Well, I think not. Now you're getting to something where you probably should get the economist back on from this morning. But what you're looking at is the output of companies is not there. So we've got, when you get into the supply chain problems and that there isn't enough product, so the purchase orders aren't going through and things along those lines aren't happening. So that's where you get into the problem of product being bought or being ordered. So companies are doing it, but payments probably not going through yet. You know, you go and buy a car, you might put down $2,000 and quote unquote buy the car, but you're not going to pay for it until that car arrives 9 months from now. So I think that's probably where a big part of the gross domestic product problem is, in where the output is there, is not there yet, but we're showing that we're active and there's jobs to be done.
So that's still supply chain stuff then, isn't it?
Oh, I think there's huge supply chain. Remember, you know, one of the biggest countries we import from is China, and you've got China that through, whether it's phase one of COVID, phase two of COVID, what have you, that their economy started and stopped and started and stopped. And so we've got problems coming from China. We've got problems in America. We've got union issues on the West Coast that won't bring product in into the port. So I think there's a lot of challenges that are faced in the supply chain problem. You know, go look at a car dealership and see how few cars are on the lots. Those are problems that are not going to be solved in 60 days or 90 days, John.
Tom Gimbel, CEO, founder, LaSalle Network. Click on thelasallenetwork.com, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, Tom.
Stay healthy and buy a car, John.
Jack Ablin, who is the Chief Investment Officer and founding partner at Crescent Capital. Hey, Jack, welcome back to WGN.
Thanks, John.
So let's talk a little bit about the Fed, and I suppose we'll touch on the same issue that Tom Gimbel and I were talking about a moment ago, a recession versus an inflation. What's foremost on your mind today?
Yeah, for me, probably the most important factor I'm watching is inflation itself. The Fed has already said they're setting their sights on inflation, and they're not going to rest until inflation is conquered. And right now, as you all probably know, we've got the highest year-over-year inflation rate that we've seen in over 40 years. So we're going to get a new inflation report, I think, in a week. And I'm hoping, keeping my fingers crossed, that we will see some abatement in that growth rate.
By the way, are year-over-year numbers relevant now? They weren't in 21 because they postdated 2020. But 21 wasn't a normal year either. I just wonder what the appropriate metrics are. How far back does the timeline have to go for these numbers to be apples to apples?
Yeah, year-over-year typically is pretty good because it removes the seasonal factors. But, you know, you're right, John. 2020 was a remarkable year for prices. And so 2021 looked like there were a fair amount of gains. I think the Fed had kind of brushed a lot of that information off, thinking that, okay, well, 2020 is, you know, a pretty low starting point. But now we've got, a reasonably high starting point, and that should start to weigh in our favor. I would say the experts are looking at everything month to month. And if we look at month to month, we've actually got some good news. And if you've seen pump prices on average nationally, we've gone from roughly $5 a gallon for a gallon of unleaded to something in the low fours. We've seen some commodity prices come off. Chicken, for example, is down. Wheat, we saw a shipment leave Ukraine a week or so ago.
Yeah.
That's come down a lot. Lumber is down. So, you know, I will say, you know, it's hard to predict inflation rates, but at least a lot of the ingredients going into that mix are showing signs of less pressure.
Well, we're at 9.1, right? Is that the most recent number?
Yeah, 9.1, yeah.
And is that the peak then? Is it going to continue to go down now?
Well, that's our hope. You know, I would say I believe that economists are calling for, and I'm trying to look it up here, but something like 8.8 or mid to high 8. So I'm hopeful that the 9.1 is the highest we're going to see on a year-over-year basis. Now, I will say I was out there flapping my arms saying that March was going to be the highest we'd see on a year-over-year basis. So I'm just like the Fed. I'm waiting and I'm watching data. But I do think that of all of the data series that's out there, I think unfortunately inflation is probably the most important, more than payrolls, more than profits, everything else for right now. And the reason is because if the Fed does have to ramp up its inflation attack, it doesn't care. It's not going to care about the economy. It's not going to care about stock prices. It's sort of like the Fed has this little house fire in the living room. You know, they're going to extinguish it, and they don't really care about the upholstery right now. So I'm hopeful that inflation will be contained and the Fed won't have to go to great lengths to really rein it in.
Well, you continue to think that the supply chain issues resolve themselves. I don't know what's going to happen with China or Ukraine, for that matter. But I'm wondering what sort of so I say that to say that my expectation or hope anyway is that inflation has peaked and we're on our way down to somewhere around 3, who knows when. But I wonder what wild cards would complicate this. What would suddenly make it worse again? I mean, is there something you're looking over your shoulder, hope isn't gaining on us?
Well, let's see. China's now conducting missile tests off of Taiwan.
Yeah.
They're encircling Taiwan with some sort of military drills. So that could be some, you know, I'm always looking for something to lose sleep over, John. That could be my next, that could be my next news item.
Yes, that'll be the title of your book, Jack Adler. But give me something else then that you're thinking about or watching today. So I understand what you're saying about inflation.
Yeah, let me give, I mean, some great news is corporate profits. We're almost through second quarter corporate profits. Profits, in spite of the strong dollar, high inflation, supply chain, everything else, corporations eked out a 9%. I wouldn't say eked out. They've actually came through with a 9% year-over-year profit growth on something like 16% revenue growth. Sure, we're hearing some evidence now from, you know, Walmart, Target, and even AT&T that consumers are starting to pare back. That actually helps the inflation fight in many respects. AT&T is kind of raised a concern that some of their customers are late on their bills. So we want to take a close look there. The other thing is if we watch the banks, you know, they're still lending as if there isn't a big recession in front of us, and they're not raising their loan loss reserves. So, you know, I always look to the banks as one part of the economy that really has their eyes at the ground level, so to speak. And if they're not concerned, I'm not going to be concerned about the health of the consumer.
Well, and, you know, I think it depends on the consumer you're talking about. A lot of our listeners right now aren't buying houses. They're at the end of their earning lives, and they're not the consumers they once were. They're more concerned about the retirement accounts. And the Dow's back above 32. It's slightly off today, but I wonder if their breathing a sigh of relief matters a little bit to you. They might not be blamed for thinking that this thing is bottomed out.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of evidence to suggest that perhaps the stock market has bottomed out. I mean, the entire move that we've seen this year, while it seemed pretty extreme, we were down over 20% at one point. We've rallied back a little bit. Most of it has been almost entirely explained by the changes in the interest rate yields. And so from that perspective, this was probably one of the most orderly declines that I've ever seen. So if interest rates can stay low, the way that happens is with inflation staying low and the Fed not having to ratchet up, you know, overnight rates much farther than they are right now.
Yeah.
You know, we don't slip into an economic tailspin, then I think, you know, the stock market is certainly justified where it is right now. And we'll likely, if we start to see inflation come down, I would say could possibly rally ahead of here.
Jack Ablin is the chief investment officer and founding partner at Crescent Capital. Nice to talk to you, Jack. Let's visit again.
Thanks, John.
The A word. August. I mean, you want summer to last as long as it can, but some kids will be going back to school in a few weeks, and everybody else 4 weeks, some 2 weeks. Some kids have gone back to college. Deloitte has actually done a study on cost of going back to school. Deloitte's 2022 Back to School Survey focused on 400 Chicago area parents of school-aged children and examined consumers' attitudes towards back-to-school's costs and season. Matt Adams is a principal over there. Let's talk a little bit about this. Matt, what's the headline? What did you guys find?
Thanks, John. The place that I would start is that Chicago shoppers are a little bit uneasy about the economy and inflation, but it's not changing their view on spending for their kids, that the spend levels are consistent with what we saw last year and significantly greater than what we see nationally.
What's an example?
An example is, they're spending on technology still in very significant amounts. They're spending on their kids' mental well-being. That 55% of parents in the Chicago area are concerned about their kids' mental health, and 46% have already purchased products accordingly, things like spending on music, arts, sports, camp, even meditation apps and yoga. So parents are definitely prioritizing their children.
you know, I guess, you know, we always talk about that scenario where someone decides if they're going to get groceries or gas for the car or medicine. If people were prioritizing their spending, I'd suppose they'd put their children first. Maybe their pets a close second. And then, you know, vacations and mortgages and things like that have to just fall by the wayside, huh?
Yeah, that seems to be the case based on our survey, the Deloitte survey. And the spending levels are still holding strong despite inflation this year.
Can you give us some raw numbers? Like, how much are we spending on stuff?
Yeah, Chicago parents are spending on average $886 per child for back to school, which is, like I said, significantly higher than the $661 that is spent nationally. Another example is in technology spend. Chicago parents are spending over $650 per student. So it's still significant amounts.
I have to tell you, I mean, most people send their kids to public schools. I suppose you've got maybe kids in high school or college, which are skewing these numbers high. They all sound very high to me. $886 per kid to go back to school?
That's right. Yeah, and like I said, a lot of it is technology. The interesting thing that I took away from the spending levels this year is actually technology is down relative to last year, which maybe isn't particularly surprising given the state of more in-person education and where we were last year. But part of that is also that 80% of Chicago parents are expecting that students will get devices and other technology from schools this year. So while technology spend is down by more than $50 per student, it doesn't reflect diminished prioritization on technology, just that parents are expecting, to your point, to get it from other places, from schools themselves.
And you know what? I would, too. I mean, if a good education these days requires a laptop computer, I would expect the public school to provide that, regardless of income, too, I might add. It would just seem to me like that ought to be as basic as a textbook.
It seems that parents agree with you based on what we're seeing in our study.
Do you know, though, this may not be an area of your research, but I wonder what percentage of schools do provide that? Chicago Public...
You know, that is a great question, yeah. and you're right. It is not part of what we asked.
Clothing and accessories. Pardon me for running everything through my own filter, but it would seem to me like when I went back to school, even high school, the major purchase was clothes because technology was a non-issue. Eventually, you bought a pocket calculator, but it wasn't laptops and it wasn't smartphones. Has the cost of clothing gone up to go back to school?
What we're seeing is that parents are expecting to spend basically exactly the same. So not a decrease or a increase at all, but it's exactly on par with last year. Slightly more in school supplies, but same for clothing and accessories.
The mental health thing is kind of interesting, the way you put it, because you said art supplies, even athletics. But I suppose that makes sense. So a travel baseball team or soccer or whatever, parents are still spending money on that, not just because they want their kid to do it, but because better that than they sit around and mope about the pandemic, huh?
That's right. Yeah, it's interesting that parents made that connection between activities and keeping their children active and their mental well-being. And I think that's, you know, as a parent myself, not surprising, just acknowledging that social interaction is so valuable. But in our survey, we definitely saw that connection very clearly.
Yeah, maybe parents should take their own advice and, you know, exercise more and try and work out the stress that way rather than some of the other ways we're doing it or not doing it at all. Are they buying retail? Are people looking off brand?
Largely, it is a similar composition that we saw last year. Still, and maybe what I'll add to that is parents are increasingly going back to stores. So it's really hard to tell what normal is in a post-pandemic or at least whatever, you know, situation we're in now. But it's clear people are continuing to return to stores. 45% plan to do 45% of their spend, rather, is in-store this year relative to 40% last year. Not to say that online is not still valuable, we did see an increase in online-only shopping. And mobile continues to be a place where consumers are spending, but it's a lot of the same types of places, mass merchants and increase in spend at grocery stores, which I found interesting. So, yeah, it's a lot of similar to last year.
What do you make of that? Is it which direction are we going to go as a society in the near term or the midterm? Are we going to continue to shop at Mariano's in person? Or I'll tell you, when I go to Nordstrom or Macy's, say, it's amazing to me that when you walk in, a large amount of their floor space is dedicated to racks of goods that have been purchased that people are now coming to pick up, or the delivery people are picking up and delivering. You sure didn't used to see that. And I wonder where retail or grocery shopping, say, are going to land.
Yeah, I would say in addition to what we've discovered through the survey in terms of, again, consumers looking to return to stores, just working with a lot of the retailers that you mentioned and obviously many others, retailers are, I would say, investing heavily to give consumers options and really put the choice in the hands of the consumer in terms of how, when, where they want to receive their product and make purchases.
Yeah, boy, it's just a whole another level of structure that these stores have to figure. It used to be enough to find the products, retail the products. Now you got to figure out, do they want me to drop it off? Do I get to come inside the garage? Do I have to leave it at the door? Do I use a third party vendor? Are they going to come here? I mean, what a hassle, right?
Well, I think my take is actually that it's the opposite. It's giving consumers choice. It's what is easiest for you today in the situation you're in right now and for what you're specifically looking for.
Yeah, well, the hassle I was describing was the retailer, not the consumer. Matt Adams is a principal at Deloitte Consulting, specializing in retail. And the survey is out. You might click through it. You can find out more at Deloitte.com. Nice to talk to you today, Matt. Good work. We appreciate your help.
You too, John. Thank you so much.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. State Farm is raising auto insurance rates in Illinois for a third time this year. Cranes reports the insurer is raising rates 8.4%. That's the biggest ever one-time hike here in Illinois. State Farm joins other major auto insurers in raising rates. Northbrook-based Allstate recently had a rate hike of nearly 16%. The latest State Farm increase will raise premiums by an average of $6 per month or nearly $70 annually. The company's three increases this year total more than 16% or about $127 annually. The Illinois Department of Insurance has asked State Farm to justify the latest increase with detailed data. Carvana can sell cars in Illinois again for the time being. A judge has put on hold the Secretary of State's suspension of Carvana's license. The state agency took action against the company last month, claiming Carvana failed to properly process titles and registrations. Carvana can sell cars until August 31st, when the case goes to court again. A Secretary of State spokesperson says Carvana cannot issue temporary registration permits or license plates during the period. The company will have to register titles through a third-party entity licensed in Illinois to process title transactions. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
And we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Way back when WGN was about to get started, the crop dusting industry was just getting off the ground.
August 3rd, 1921 was the first aerial application conducted in the U.S. on catalpa trees in Ohio. And it was done by the U.S. Army at that time, and it's changed quite a lot, obviously, from the first one.
That is Jim Perrin.
I'm an operator from Wisconsin, and I fly fixed-wing aircraft there in Wisconsin.
Jim is president of the National Agriculture Aviation Association, and he is part of a group of some of the most skilled and professional pilots in the country, and they're not employed by the military or the airlines. They're employed by farmers. And the next time you board a Delta airliner, think of this. The airline got its start in crop dusting. In 1924, a company in Georgia called Huff Dowland began the world's first aerial crop dusting company. And 4 years later, a group of investors bought it, renamed it Delta, and began passenger service. Delta continued to operate a crop dusting division until 1966. Crop dusting has changed a lot since then.
This is my 30th season, and in that 30 years, the changes and advancements in technology are pretty impressive.
Yeah, I remember years ago when pilots would use flaggers on the ground to wave them into where their next pass should be. No more.
Everything's done via GPS. For instance, when I land, my wife will email me a job file with a shape file. That'll pop up on my computer screen inside the airplane. We could take a look at whether the weather's suitable for doing it and then go ahead and have the crew mix up the load for that. Go out, spray that field with the prescription that's got to go on that individual field. And when we're done with that field, I email that file back to my wife. We can use the same airplane to do liquid, or we can take the spray system off and put on a dry spreader system, and we can use it for putting out dry fertilizer or cover crop seeding. We do quite a bit of seeding in the U.S. with the airplane as well.
And those pilots, wow, they are something to watch. Skimming just above the top of the crops, ducking under power lines, doing aerobatics to get turned around for the next pass. It's a little like the air and water show, well, without the water. From the farm to your belly, another reason to love the dairy industry. Today is National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Joe Boyle is the CEO of Truce Software. They are in Lisle, or at least they're headquartered there. Is that where you are, Joe, in Lisle?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, we're glad you could give us some of your time. So you guys do what? You work with adults across the country about mobile device usage habits, I'm reading. Is that what you're all about?
Yeah, so we're an enterprise software company. We develop a software that helps companies to manage the safe and effective use of mobile devices in the workplace. And so there's lots of use cases that gets deployed into, but one of the most common is helping companies to keep their workers from using devices unsafely, for example, when they're behind the wheel of a car or when they're in other high-risk areas that they really need to stay focused on.
How do you do that? Is that some software you download onto devices? What happens here?
Yeah, so it begins with company policy. So mobile devices are so feature-rich. They have so many things that you can do with them, and companies want to empower their workers with all of that capability. But they want them to use that capability when the time is right. So it begins with a company policy that says when you can use certain capabilities. And then we have a very robust software application that manages the use of that device based on those policies in that situation, so that you can use the camera, for example, to collaborate with a peer about something that you're seeing out on a job site, but you're not going to use that camera, for example, when you're driving or when you're in a highly secure facility where you shouldn't be taking pictures. So it's really about enabling companies to provide all of the technology that comes from a mobile device, but really making sure that it's used effectively.
Are these devices personal devices of the employees or company issued?
They can be both. So many of our customers were helping them to manage the way that corporately owned devices are being used in the workplace. And in some environments, they have a bring your own device policy that you're allowed to bring your own personal device into the workplace and use to conduct business. And we help to manage the safe and effective use of both of those types of environments.
So in these cases, is it an app? Is it an app that you download onto the phone or the laptop, say?
It's a bit more robust than just an application. But yes, we manage basically every type of mobile device that you can think of that's out in the workplace. So We do a lot on mobile phones and tablets. But we even do things on, we even bring this capability to toughbooks and ruggedized laptop devices. For example, we tend to work with quite a few police forces to make sure that their officers have all the access to the toughbooks that they need, but maybe not be keying things in when they're in hot pursuit.
Hmm. Who are some of your customers? Municipalities, private businesses? Give me an example or two.
Yeah, absolutely. So we tend to work with most of the major companies that have large workforces, and that's everything from great local companies or great companies that are based here in Chicago, like Walsh Construction, who do business, obviously, on a very national scale. We work heavily with Walsh. We work heavily with many of the public utilities, most of the infrastructure provider. So the work vehicles that you see around town, whether that's from pest control to internet connectivity, all of those mobile workforces tend to be customers of Truce. And we do everything from the pharmaceutical industry to airline and rail. So really anybody who has a really large mobile workforce where they're enabling them with technology, they tend to be our customers.
Joe, are you able to disable my phone so that I can't text while driving?
Absolutely. That's one of the major use cases that, that we enable, and it saves a lot of lives. Unfortunately, too many innocent lives are being lost from people not keeping eyes on road or eyes on task. And Truce Software, one of the many things that we do is we put a stop to that unfortunate problem.
That's called TruceSoftware.com. TruceSoftware.com. The CEO of Truce Software is Joe Boyle. Fascinating, Joe. Glad you're out there. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.